Welcome back to another edition of Retro Radio on the Retro Radio Ranch. I'm Greg Martin, your host, and as we always do here, we spend some time talking to some folks that were instrumental somehow in the development of our lives, in that retro aspect of, you know, what were the things that made your life extra special through those days, you know, toys and movies and television and music and all those kind of things. And I was a big fan of movies. I always have been a big fan of movies. And I was a big fan of a lot of the great Western movies from the time. And one of those actors that I always really enjoyed in the films, especially, was a guy named Glenn Ford. And unfortunately, Glenn's no longer with us, but we have, I guess I would call you the next best thing. Peter Ford, son of Glenn, is with us. Hi, Peter.
Yes, hi. Hi, Greg. Yeah, I'm all that's left now. Just me. Dad passed in 2006, but he lived to be 90, and he made a lot of Westerns and a lot of films, and he left a great legacy behind for all of us fans, including me. And so he still lives, actually. That's one of the blessings of having a parent who is a movie person, because their whole lives, basically, are preserved on film.
And you're not the product of just one great actor. You're actually a byproduct of two.
Yes. My mom's Eleanor Powell, and she was a very big star at MGM back in the 30s and into the 40s. So, yes, I'm blessed with two very talented parents.
Now, let's talk a little bit. I have a number of good friends that are the sons or daughters of. And one of the questions that they always get bombarded with, and I'm not going to ask you that question because I know the answer is, you know, what was it like to be the son of Glenn Ford? And that was Dad, right?
Yeah, no, it was, yes, of course, the easy answer is, I don't know what else, you know, I don't know, I was never the son of anyone else, so I can't compare it. But no, it was just Dad. Yeah, that was it. Just Dad. It was when I grew up. I didn't know all these movie stars that I know now were movie stars would come to the house for dinner and stop by, and they were just folks, you know, just the regular friends that your parents would have. But now that I'm older and know, they were very, very famous people.
Do you consider that a, well, again, this is, it's all relative here, Peter. You know, people would say, well, it was a charmed life for you.
Well, if you read my book, Glenn Ford, A Life, which I know we're going to talk about, you can see that there wasn't such a charmed life. I mean, I guess now, while that I'm older, it was charming in many ways. It was charming to meet all those people, to get to know them, and to have them in my memory bank. But at the time, they were just people coming by the house, and certainly a lot of my life growing up was not, how shall we say this, it was not that wonderful. There's a lot of baggage that goes along with being the offspring of one, if not two, movie stars, and as will be attested to by the very sad plight of many of my peers, not to get too deep in the weeds, but many of them didn't survive the experience of being the son or daughter of a movie star. So to me, they were just people who came to the house. My life was not that great when I was younger. It got a lot better when I got older because I could appreciate the things that I had. And of course, as difficult as some of the moments I had with my dad was, it did give me the opportunity to travel. And when he went places, when he and I kind of mended our fences. You know, I've been around the world a couple of times, and I've met the kings of countries and presidents, and so those opportunities are very special, which, of course, had I not been his son, I would not have experienced them.
The book that you, again, that you mentioned is Glenn Ford, A Life, by you, a remembrance, kind of not only your father, but your mother as well. It could have easily been one of those books you flipped over on the backside was the Eleanor Powell story.
Yes, right. It was. It is, especially, it's kind of three books. But you're correct. Yeah, it's like one of those great records we would get when we were young, and they would play the A side, and you flip it over, and there's the B side. It's just as good or better. But yeah, no, it was mom's story, dad's story, and kind of our story or my story. So it was. You're getting three for one with that one, Greg.
Well worth the price, by the way, and you can pick it up at any bookstore. I'm assuming at this point. Yes.
Oh yeah, it's everywhere, and it's on Amazon. I mean, if without being too self-promoting, I would like to just tell folks that my website is www.glennfordbio.com. Glenn with two N, glennfordbio.com, and if you go there, you can. There's a link to purchase the book, and it's there on Amazon. It's very inexpensive on Amazon, but it's in bookstores everywhere, and it's doing very well. I'm very happy. We're getting some very nice reviews on the Amazon link, and so it's being well received, and I'm very pleased for that because it took me 7 years to write it, Greg. It was a labor. I tried to be honest, but I also wanted to honor my father as the great actor that I feel he was, and many people feel he was, and yet tell the true story, which was a little painful. So that's a little bit of everything in that book, I think.
That has to be tough. I mean, as you mentioned, because you really do want to pay tribute to these two people that made so many people happy with their movies and continue today. I mean, I have now become a big fan of film noirs and the old musicals. And, of course, both of those are things that your father and your mother were instrumental in. But at the same time, as you said, you're telling a real story here. And by gum, you know, most of us don't have, you know, these fairy tale stories that we tell. We all have warts and bumps and things like that.
Yeah, no, you're right. It that was what was so difficult. I'm not bitter. It's not a bitter book. I'm not bitter about the bad times that I had. You know, quite frankly, in retrospect, people would look at my life and say, "You got to be kidding! What bad times?" But I never had a dad. I guess that's kind of it's kind of a cautionary tale, Greg. I never really had a father. I don't know what kind of dad you had, or anybody out there who's listening or to this show right now. But I don't know. A son wants to have a buddy, a dad, a mentor, a friend who will guide him through life. And my dad just was not there for me. And again, it's not that I think he didn't want to be, he just didn't know how to be. And of course, the work of being an actor is so narcissistic and you're so self-involved. And you go to work at 6 in the morning and you come home at 6 at night and you're exhausted. And he just gave himself to his profession completely. And so there wasn't really a lot of time left for my mom and me. And so I really never had the experience of having a real father. So, and I think that is a tale I just in life, having lived as long as I have, whether your dad's a house painter or a politician or a movie star or anything, dads aren't necessarily created equal, and some are wonderful and some aren't. And I think a lot of young folks like me, didn't have that great dad. But a lot of people, as you just mentioned, think, oh my goodness, you know, you're living in, as I did, in a 22-room mansion in Beverly Hills, and we had servants, and I had my own chauffeur that drove me to school, and I was like little Lord Fauntleroy, you know? But it's a cautionary tale. As I said, it wasn't all so wonderful, and I wanted to tell that story, that it's not... This is Hollywood, you know, Greg. It's the land of make-believe, and we were a make-believe family, and that's what the story's about.
Very good friend of mine is the son of a very famous Hollywood couple, and he tells, I mean, it's the identical story. I mean, his father was not there, the mother was really not there that much, he was raised by the nanny or whatever the case happens to be. You wound up, or at least in his case, he wound up in a situation where, you know, he kind of had the world at his fingertips, but without having that parental guidance, do you feel like maybe you were a boat without a rudder?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I raised myself. I'm now, in my case, my mom was an angel, and she was there for me my whole life until she passed. But sadly, my mom died when she was 69 years old in 1982, so she was very young. Dad, as I said, lived to 90. But I didn't really, and my mother was very naive. Both my parents were really very naive, but my mom, she did not know the ways of the world ever. From a very young girl, she wanted to dance. That's all she lived for, is to be a dancer, and gave herself completely to her dancing. And so, in fact, when she married my dad in 1943, she was born in 1912, she had never written a check in her life. Her mother handled all of that for her. And so she just danced and danced and danced in MGM. And so she had nothing really to tell me about life, about the reality of how one gets through the day. But she gave me the most important thing, and that's love, unconditional love. And so for her, I'm safe. But, you know, you're right. As I mentioned earlier, I'm thinking about Eric Douglas, Kirk Douglas's son, and Gregory Peck's son committed suicide, and Barbara Eaton's son. And, I mean, there's just a whole list of my peers, my, you know, supposed associates who have taken their lives, or they've become drug addicted, or they've become angry, and it's tough. But I just made a decision long ago that I wasn't going to be defeated by it. I always looked at what I could do with making lemonade out of lemons, I guess. And again, people are going to say, you're kidding. Those are lemons. Well, when you're a little kid and you have you think you've been delivered to Beverly Hills to be the son, only child of two movie stars, I thought I was sent from Central Casting to play the role of a son. There was really, other than my mom, there was just not a lot of love in the house, and it was really tough. You have no identity growing up. I don't know about your friend. I'm sure we share a lot in common, and a lot of kids, a lot of young people can't take it, and they end it, and it's a tragedy, really. But I'm still here, married 40 years to my best friend, so I'm instilling in my children everything that I didn't have instilled in me, and I'm trying to be the best dad I can be. And being a good dad, it's work, but it's possible.
Yeah, it is work, and yes, it is possible. Hey, you're listening to Retro Radio, and we're talking with Peter Ford, who is the son of Eleanor Powell and Glenn Ford, that gave us some great, great films. Peter has just come out with a brand new book called Glenn Ford, A Life, which is, we talked a little bit earlier, is really three stories in one, according to Peter, about his dad, his mom, and their relationship together. I've been reading through the book. Fun read. You talk about an awful lot about the different movies and the things of, you know, how your dad got into these different roles and just kind of the workings of Hollywood, which is always fun to see from the backside, because so many people don't understand that when an actor isn't acting, he's unemployed.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. And in my dad's case, he loved to act. He would rather act than eat or breathe. I mean, he loved acting. He was miserable when he was home. So it was not a happy time when he was there, and he just loved acting. And he's been, I guess, by some critics anyway, criticized for hanging in there too long. And a lot of the movies he did make at the end of his career were not, let's say, of the highest caliber, but he didn't care. He never really cared about his image. Ancillary to all of this, he never was nominated for an Academy Award, and he didn't care, but I care. You know, I felt he deserved it. A lot of people feel he should have been. I mean, there's others who haven't been nominated, but I thought in my dad's case, my goodness, all of the work he did. But he didn't care. He just wanted to work, and he kept working, and toward the end, he did a lot of junk, but I don't know. He worked, and that's what he cared about.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you tell a story in here that, as an old radio guy that's been spinning the hits for as many years as I have, the story you tell in here about picking a piece of music for one of the, well, probably one of your dad's most instrumental films, just really thrilled me. Tell me the story about Bill Haley and the Comets.
Well, basically what happened was that I was a little music savant when I was little. I mean, I love music. I guess one of the reasons I was so drawn to music, Greg, was because I was lonely. We lived in Beverly Hills, but we did live in a big house, and I did have all of those privileges, but I really didn't have many friends because we were kind of isolated. You make friends at school, but I didn't really have a lot of friends. So music became my refuge, and I was drawn to it, and I loved, for various reasons we don't have time to get into, I loved what they used to call in those early days, in the early or mid-50s, race music, which was basically known today as, I guess, blues or rhythm and blues and doo-wop. I mean, the early groups, the Bird, any Bird group, I was, you know, like the Ravens, the Crows, the Orioles, and they were all 78 records back then. And long story short, my dad was making this movie called Blackboard Jungle at MGM, and they needed music for it, and Richard Brooks, the director, came to the house one day, and my dad said that he was describing the kind of music he wanted for the movie, and my dad said, oh, my son listens to that music, and so he took a number of records to the MGM, and they decided on Rock Around the Clock by Bill Haley and the Comets, And MGM bought the rights and went in the film. And it became, as Dick Clark called it, the national anthem of rock and roll. And I was listening to Stephen Van Zandt, who's one of Bruce Springsteen's original band members in the Z Street Band. And he has a show called Underground Radio. And little Stephen was talking about that as being, somebody kept me off to it, so it's archived when I was listening, and he said it was one of the 10 most important events in the history of rock and roll. I thought, well, boy, you know. So I don't know. I guess it was important because it was that song and that movie was kicked off this whole teenage angst-filled rebellion, and suddenly the teenagers of the Eisenhower administration had a voice, and not one that a lot of parents wanted to hear, but it became, you know, so I guess I was, I was significant in some way of at least, starting that whole thing. I sometimes wonder if that song had not been in that movie, you know, where would we have gone as a culture? Of course, a lot of adults feel today that we've been going downhill ever since. And when we lost, you know, Eddie Fisher and Rosemary Clooney, and suddenly here comes, Rock Around the Clock. It's been downhill. But I don't know. For me, I love rock and roll, and I still just love that music, and I can't be without my music to this day. So. I'm just a music guy.
The part about that story that you didn't allude to there, Peter, is the fact that Rock Around the Clock was actually the B-side of the record, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, we could do a whole hour on just that. But, yes, it was. The A-side was, well, at least Decca thought it was. Decca Records put it out. The song had come out earlier by Bill Haley and the Comets, and it had gone to number 23, I think, in the nation and fizzled away. When I got it, they were promoting 13 Women and Only One Man in Town, which is kind of a bizarre story about this one fellow who survived a nuclear holocaust, and he's left with 13 women. I think that's every little boy's fantasy, you know, in his class, that he's the only one there and all the girls in the class are his to choose from. But that's what 13 Women and One Man in Town is about, and that was Decca's opinion, the A-side. Of course, I didn't like the move of the song, and so I turned it over, as most of us did in those days. Every time you get an Elvis record or later Ricky Nelson, but you turn them over and there would be, at least a good song. And sure enough, that's where Rock Around the Clock was. And I thought, boy, this is so much better. And that was my A-side. So, they had a premiere around my 10th birthday out at the Encino Theater here in California, in the Valley, San Fernando Valley. That movie, if you look at Blackboard Jungle, and it opens with that song. Of course, these days on TV you don't get the effect, but in the movie theater, when the big amps are cranked up and that song came on, I was just the happiest kid in the world. I was just overjoyed because it was my song that was in the movie. At least that's what I thought of it, But then it became every teenager's song. And the rest is history, Greg.
As they say, and that's just a fantastic story that actually is, that's your history now, Peter.
Yeah, no, that's all my history, yep.
So. Well, the book is called Glenn Ford, A Life, and it's by Peter Ford. And, of course, we are talking to Peter Ford today, talking about the life that he has led as the son of. I want to jump past that, though, Peter, a little bit. As we all grow a little older and we deal with parents in whatever way, I know all the listeners out there are having to deal with parents in one way, shape, form, or another, and eventually we become our own person. Who is Peter Ford today?
Today I'm a married, happily married father of three, I have written this book. I was a building contractor. I've kind of jumped around in life and did a lot of things. I was a movie actor. I was in many TV series and starred in a movie, even, and I made records for, I was under contract to Capitol and to Philips Records. So, but right now what I am doing is I'm retired, and I am delightfully, happily married to my best friend, Linda, and we're raising our three children. I'm living in Dad's house, the one he built, and if you read the book, you will read about how he purchased the property where I am talking to you right now from Rita Hayworth, and he built his this dream house of his. It's 8,800 square feet. It's gigantic. It's too big, and so we're trying to sell it. But of course, in these tough economic times, things aren't selling as well as they used to. So we're here, And we don't have to sell, but we want to sell. And we, quite frankly, want to get to a little different place in this world. It's not quite as, I don't need Gucci and Rodeo Drive and Rolls Royces. We're more of a, you know, I'm not saying necessarily Kmart, but, you know, we don't need all of this glitz and glamour that Beverly Hills has become. So we're anxious to move and get to where real people are. So we're just, you know, we're just simple folk, really. If you read the book, and you'll understand more about who I am today. But that's all. I'm just a regular guy who just has a lot of very interesting memories.
I don't want to tell all the stories in the book because, I mean, there's some great stories. Who babysat, you know, and the unfortunate case of, you know, your beloved dog and those kind of things. But
yes.
They're just great stories. And I urge everybody to go pick up a copy of, you know, Glenn Ford, A Life by Peter Ford and have a good read. I mean, you know, just really enjoy all the great stories. Something I want to ask you, though, Peter, because we're about retro radio here. We're about, you know, the things that we, as you and I, grew up. You're a little bit older than I am, I think, at this point, but, you know, not a lot. We ate, like, Cap'n Crunch cereal and things like that when you were growing up, played with different kinds of toys. What was your favorite toy growing up?
Gee, you know, that's an interesting question. I can remember, of course, I had stuffed animals when I was younger. I remember I had this Pluto dog, you know, Pluto dog that I slept with day and night. And I had my Schwinn bicycle. I loved my bicycle. I used to ride my bicycle everywhere. It was a really early Schwinn. And then when my father was on location when I was very young, my mother did something that my father got very upset about. Now, of course, you have to have money to do this. And, you know, I must say I was blessed with that opportunity to have parents who were making money, but they bought me a go-kart. And I had this little Briggs & Stratton engine go-kart in the property. We lived on about 4 acres, and so there was a lot of land. And so I used to run around in this go-kart. And I got to tell you a funny story, Greg, if I might.
Absolutely.
I was in school at this a private school here in the Valley called Buckley School. And in Buckley School, there were two kids who I befriended, or they befriended me, also sons of movie stars. And it was Susan Hayward's sons, Tim and Greg Barker. She was married to Lex Barker. And they had go-karts, too. And so I had my go-kart, and Tim and Greg had their go-kart. They lived over in the San Fernando Valley. And we used to, if Susan had these tomato plants, now if anybody who grows tomatoes knows that they have these, I guess butterflies land on them and they turn into these green worms that, you know, are decimate your tomato plants. And so we used to take her, it was my idea, of course, we used to take these tomato worms and put them all over Susan's driveway and then, as little boys would do, we would drive the go-kart over them. And once they get squished into the driveway, they're impossible to get out. And I'm telling you this story because many, 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 many years later, Linda and I were at a party, and Susan Hayward was there. And I said to myself, oh, boy, am I going to impress Linda, you know, and introduce her to Susan Hayward. And now this is just the mother of my two friends. I hadn't seen her maybe in 25 years. You know, it's a long time. And so I walk up to Susan Hayward, and I say to her, Mrs. Hayward, I said, this is Peter Ford. I want to introduce you to my wife, Linda. She turns around, and she looks me right in the eye, and she says, you were an obnoxious child. And she went to tell Linda how I ruined her driveway and these tomato worms. I thought I was just, and she turned away. Just, you're an obnoxious child. And she, you know, relayed the story of how I had badly influenced her two sons, and she turned her back on me. So,
thank you very much, huh?
I thought, well, okay, but you know, mothers don't forget, I guess. But that's a little toy story for you. But I think about that to this day. Of course, she's now passed, but you know, I don't know. I didn't have a whole lot of toys. I tell you the truth, I was a music guy, and I was indulged, and I did. They did give me every record I wanted, and I had a huge record collection. And of course, getting back in those days, 78 by Johnny Ace and those people were kind of tough to do because there wasn't a lot of people who were listening to my kind of music in Beverly Hills in the mid 50s, and of course the Beverly Hills record shop wasn't, you know, they had lots of Eddie Fisher records and those kinds, but I was into the dark side of music, you know, with Ivory Joe Hunter and all different groups. So you know, it was. I think, Folly, I ate the same food that you did. We all ate the kind of, you know, all of that food, but I can't tell you of anything that stands out in my mind, Greg.
Well, let me tell you. First off, thank you for being, you know, part of the dark side of the music, because, you know, all of us great, you know, radio people really appreciate that.
Oh, yeah.
This is how my mind works, though. You were a co-star in the show Cades County, right?
Right. I was in every one of the episodes.
1971 TV series. This is how my mind works here, Peter. Scanning down through the cast list, I ran across the name of a guy named Mike Rode.
You've got me there. I don't remember it. I don't remember Mike Rode, I must say. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I mean, supposedly he was in two episodes and played like the district attorney or something. I don't know.
Huh.
When I saw Mike Rode's name, I immediately thought of the Johnny Quest cartoon series, because Mike Rode was the voice of Race Bannon, who was Johnny Quest's or Dr. Quest's assistant. See, that's how my mind works on this weird sort.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, no, well, you know, you're far brighter with that than me. I tell you, no, it's great. I love Flash Gordon. I just loved, you know, Dr. Zarkov and Flash and Dale. Of course, I realized that my father had co-starred in his first film with Gene, you know, with the Gene Rogers, but I love the Flash Gordon series. And of course, back in the day when I went to the theater, they would always have, it was always a double feature, and then they'd always have a shorter cartoon. But those were great days. I just and you know, on TV we had, well, in the early days, of very early, we had a TV, as you can imagine, when they first came out.
It was, sure,
in the late 40s, and I remember, of course, you know, Milton Berle and all of those, Hilo Hattie and those early TV shows, and wrestling. I mean, I remember those early wrestling shows. It seemed like wrestling was on all the time, and they'd have these guys, you know, wrestling, and they had, still even then, they had the bad guys and the good guys.
It was, oh yes,
it was great. It was great. Yeah.
People think wrestling is something new in the last 10 years, and it's older than Methuselah almost.
Oh yeah. No, you're not kidding. I remember this one guy, Ricky Starr. I don't even know. I just remember him. And I remember he would get on the ropes and he'd jump and fly across the ring. And, you know, if he were alive today, he'd probably be 150. But, those are great days. Yeah, just the early TV and Climax and Playhouse 90, if you know, getting into the serious stuff. And the Show of Shows, Sid Caesar. I mean, just wonderful, wonderful. A lot of creativity in those days. And of course, now all of those shows are archived. My dad did a lot of radio, and I have most all of his shows. And you know, to this day, I enjoy it. I'm serious. They have you know, these retro radio shows and Suspense, brought to you by Roma Wine. You know, and oh, it's just great. I love it. I love all those stuff. Our parents, long before we had television, they had radio, and radio was the major form of entertainment, and to me, it's still wonderful.
Has always been my first love and will always be the first one I ask to go to the dance with, I can guarantee you.
Yeah. No, I don't watch TV today. I don't watch. I can tell you the truth, it's terrible. I've never seen a CSI or whatever it's called. I've never seen one of those Survivor shows, the reality shows. It's bizarre. I watch the news a lot. I like sports. I don't think I've seen a prime time. You know, I remember Mork and Mindy. That's about the last thing I remember. But, I mean, we just don't watch TV here. We're just too busy. I don't know. It's odd. But of course, I am Greg, living always in 1955 in a black and white world. And it's all very, very nice back there. And I'm very happy to be back in 1955.
Peter Ford, author of the book Glenn Ford, A Life, the son of Glenn Ford and Eleanor Powell. We want to say thank you so much, Peter, for spending a few minutes with us and talking about the things of the past. And hopefully, you know, near future, you'll be moving on in your Hollywood, you know, house, moving out of there and moving up our way. We don't know.
Yeah, I've got to go somewhere. I can't stay here, but bless your heart. Thank you, and thank you to all of your listeners. And this is still the greatest nation on earth, and I'm happy to be an American. I love our country, and you know, I would never leave this great nation, but I can certainly leave the state of California, that's for sure.
Well, and I urge you to. That's my word right there. Get out.
Thank you.
Okay. Peter Ford, thank you so very much, and pick up a copy of Glenn Ford, A Life, at your local bookstore. Peter, thanks.
Thank you.
And that's this week's edition of Retro Radio. We hope you'll join us again next week as who knows who's going to pop up on here. You just never know. It's Retro Radio. I'm Greg Martin. Thanks for listening.